Today, we're going to learn a little bit about our dogs. Melissa Berryman is a former animal control officer in Falmouth and has written a new book, People Training for Good Dogs, What Breeders Don't Tell You and Trainers Don't Teach. She joins us in studio this morning to talk about her book and her training technique. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mindy.
This is going to be really interesting because you've got a lot of interesting things to say. Your philosophy, as illustrated in your title, is that people want to bring a dog into their lives, need to be trained as dog handlers. This is different from dog obedience training. So to help illustrate the difference, you make the analogy of to horseback riding. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I make a lot of analogies with horses because we do much better with horses than we seem to do with dogs. But if you think about it, if you're going to learn to ride a horse, you don't call a horse trainer, you call a riding instructor. Mm-hmm. But with dogs, we just have dog trainers. So with horses, you want to learn how to ride before you learn how to train it. You try to train it. With dogs, we just give you a dog to train. So they're really missing a step here. And the step is you need to learn how to handle your animal. Before you learn how to train it, you have to have a level of proficiency with dogs. Mm.
And I imagine as an animal control officer, you have witnessed many bad situations with dogs, with dog owners, between dog owners and neighbors or other members of the community. Did some of your experiences on the job, is that what prompted you to look more into this and write this book?
Definitely. I suffered from the same types of misperceptions that I find that pervade this society. So it was only with working with folks and going to these calls that I really saw that we're really in trouble, that we're really doing a disservice. Because most people don't understand dogs the way they need to be understood. We look at it from our perspective. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the problems in the calls that I was facing was due to misperceptions between species, mm-hmm. misunderstandings.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of those misperceptions. What are some of the more common misperceptions?
Well, we think that dogs act in a vacuum. So if there's an injury or an incident, we think that the dog has this preconceived idea that it's going to go do something, to hurt us, to do it on purpose. And we take ourselves out of the situation and the context. And we tend to do that as human beings. We tend to stereotype and characterize things as being aggressive. You wouldn't think that just because you got angry yesterday that you're an angry person, mm-hmm. but that's kind of what we do with dogs.
Yeah. Now, before getting a dog, many people do a lot of research about what type of a breed they want. They want this dog that's going to be good with kids or one that doesn't need a lot of grooming. There's a lot of things that they look at. A safe breed is a big thing we hear nowadays. Can you talk about some of the basic instincts of dogs that are universal throughout all breeds?
Well, you bring up a great point because there are this understanding we're selling that you can buy behavior and it does not matter what you do with it. The dog's going to do whatever it says in the breed book. And we end up changing our behavior to make those things true, which becomes kind of funny. It's kind of like going to a car dealership and asking for the car that won't crash. Mm-hmm. It just is not true. So with dogs, I like to bring it back to what's important for them for when they were wolves, because their brain is all designed for living out in the wild. It really isn't designed for retrieving or herding. Those are our applications to what's natural for them. So I like to spend a lot of time with people. And it's through this whole book about trying to understand things from their perspective. Mm-hmm. Say, for example, they have different senses than we do. If you're thinking about sense of sight, sense of smell, sense of hearing, our best is our sense of sight. Their best is their sense of smell. Our worst is our sense of smell. Their worst is their sense of sight. Mm-hmm. So they actually experience the world in polar opposite than we do. And we don't think about it that way.
Okay. One of the big things we see where a lot of times we see children getting injured by dogs is hugging. They go up and they hug the dog. well, for us, hugging is a sign of affection, but not so much from the dog's perspective.
Not at all. I'm glad you brought this up. This is one of my biggest campaigns. If I can get people to avoid hugging like the plague, I'll think I've done something good in this world. There are so many images of children and dogs, and they're hugging the dog. But we have to think about it from what it means to a dog, because our hugging developed from carrying children. When you carry a child, they wrap their arms around your neck. So that means I love you, I care for you, I comfort you. And we have rotator cuffs. Dogs don't have rotator cuffs, and they carry their young by the back of the neck. So it doesn't mean the same thing. What it actually does, you know, you've never seen a dog go up and hug another dog. What you will see them do is go and mount each other and hold each other that way. And that is a dominance and a positional gesture. So if you're above the dog in status, because dogs have superior subordinate relationships, they're just submitting to your dominance. But if they think they're above you in status, then you're challenging them for pack position. And because the kid's face and the dog's face are so close, the dog has no other choice of when they snap out, they end up getting the child's face. And they've usually warned the child beforehand by stiffening their body. Mm-hmm. Stiff body actually is a negative, you know, they're not sure they're going to take action if they're stiffening. But we ignore what they're telling us.
Mm, yeah. And when you think about it too, when, you know, you have a dog and some young pups around, and the young pups are doing something they shouldn't, they usually get snipped at.
Yeah. It's very, very normal within their group. I separate dog behavior into within the group and outside of the group. In the group, they have competition over status. You know, you'll see them try to figure out who's above whom. And they also compete over resources. And that can be food, toys. Attention is a huge resource, where a lot of times a dog will attack another dog because you're the resource. Mm-hmm. And we forget that. And then outside of the group, they might bite because they think something's prey. They think somebody's foe. And they get into what's called fight or flight. If you get cornered or you feel like you have no out and you're in imminent danger, you're going to fight.
Yeah. We're talking with Melissa Berryman. Her book is People Training for Good Dogs, What Breeders Don't Tell You and Trainers Don't Teach. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number into the program. 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email to thepoint@wgbh.org. Most people who get dogs are animal lovers, of course. And when you see a puppy or a dog that's up for adoption, it's hard not to kind of fall in love with those cute little puppy eyes. So what we're thinking at the moment is dog ownership is a big responsibility. Not only are you committing a lot of time and energy to the animal, but you're also liable for the dog's behavior, which is something I think a lot of people maybe don't think so much about. So whether it's your dog's barking that's bothering the neighbors, or if your dog bites someone, talk a little bit about the legal liabilities of being a dog owner.
Well, most of our laws across the country have to do with protecting livestock, and they're old and antiquated. The problem is changing them has been slow coming. So we have a society that feels that if a dog does something, we should get rid of the dog. So instead of us changing our behavior and looking at the whole context, if somebody does something and they think that they haven't done anything, you know, I was just minding my own business, and the dog acts, they just look at it from the dog's perspective. And we blame the dog owner. And a lot of times we think that if something happens, it's because the dog owner's bad, or they've done the wrong things with the dog purposefully, or the dog's bad. And that's not true. Most of it is you and me who have a dog who just don't look at anything proactively, because we think, well, my dog would never do that. Mm-hmm. My dog's a good dog. I'm a good person. And we set ourselves right up into a problem.
Yeah. You also write there aren't bad breeds of dogs. For example, pit bulls, which really get a bad rap. There's a stereotype about pit bulls, which comes from them being used for fighting. But you talk to so many pit bull owners who say, my pit bull's just really a big baby. So dogs can be bred to have more aggressive or more docile temperaments, right?
I don't like to look at it that way, because I look at it from pack position. Mm-hmm. If, and I equate it with the military. If you're the leader of the pack, you're like the general, what's your temperament going to be? Well, it's going to be bossy, controlling, on top of everything. If you're the private and you're the bottom of the pack, you have no control. You have no power. So you're going to be the suck up. You're going to be the happy-go-lucky, I have to take the orders. And if, again, we're throwing away the dogs that challenge us and we don't have a lot of skills and abilities ourselves, we end up with a lot of private type dogs.
Wow.
And when we have a lot of private type dogs, that's where everybody's experience lies.
Mm-hmm.
And the media, it has to look for news. What's news? New stuff. New stuff is, hey, this dog ripped this kid apart. Well, a lot of times the kid could have done something to have avoided the issue as well. So they really just expose us to the negatives.
We also have insurance companies now. If you have a dog that's known as an aggressive breed, it impacts your insurance.
It certainly does. And this is where I write about this in the book a lot. And one of the reasons why I got involved in developing a defensive driving type program for dog owners. If something happens, the insurance company will pay the claim, but then they'll drop you. And when they drop you, you'll have to get another insurance company to cover you. And we know how hard that is in Cape Cod. And it's a lot more expensive, and they want the dog gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a situation here, and it ended up in Boston media as well. It's about 15 years ago, but a man just brought his dog to the soccer game of his child and let one of his other children walk the dog. And another kid came running up, and nobody saw it, but the dog just snapped at the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the parent's going to get very upset because dogs should not bite, right? That's what we're thinking. We're not thinking that we have a role to play in it. Went through, I guess the child went to the hospital, went through the homeowner's insurance, and he's calling me pretty much in tears about the fact that now he has to give up the dog. And how is he going to tell his children that he's got to give the dog up because he can't get homeowner's insurance?
Mm.
So it's really something that we want to be proactive about and not figure out after the fact, because I got so many calls. Nobody told me this. I never knew about this. Why didn't I know about this?
So there's a key point right here. What you're saying is any dog can bite. You may think your dog is not a biter, but in a particular situation, your dog could bite.
Definitely. I mean, it is normal behavior for them to bite. They only have their mouths to communicate with. So if put in a situation, and some of the situations that would provoke a dog to bite, we would think that shouldn't provoke a dog to bite.
Yeah, so a key component then to your training technique is helping us understand, how dogs interpret human behavior. So what we're thinking, back to the hugging, to us it's a sign of showing love. To the dog, maybe not so much, because you're down the pecking order, you're maybe challenging their authority. So what are some of the other ways that we can prevent some of these bad situations for our dogs?
Well, one of it, a good thing to know is encounters. And anytime you're encountering a dog, or you have your dog and you're encountering a person or another animal, we need to do it the dog way. And dogs do a lot of things with sound. They have not spoken language, but they have tonal language. The low pitch is a growl. High pitch actually sends off endorphins for them. It's pack bonding to them. And so anytime I have an encounter, I use that high pitch because I want to send some positive endorphins. I want them to think that stranger, and everybody is a stranger, even if you've socialized your dog, any encounter with somebody new or some animal that's new is an encounter with a stranger. So I want to turn that over to be an encounter with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we with friends? Well, we're happy and relaxed, higher pitch voice. And because dogs are, I consider them to be blind because they have such visual problems compared to us, I use sound to help them be reassured that everything's okay. So it's kind of like being like Richard Simmons without the shorts.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to lay it on thick. Hey, how you doing? Everything's great.
Yeah.
But we have been conditioned to keep our mouths shut since we were little kids.
Well, the other thing, too, you say if you come to us during, and there's that, is this dog going to bite me? What's happening? You say use the higher tone voice, but also you say to not put your hand out for the dog to sniff your hand, but to tap your leg.
When you put your hand out for them to sniff, A, there's no information in your hand about you. Dogs would never sniff each other's paws, you know, when they greet each other. So you stiffen your body when you do that.
You said that stiff body is not a good thing.
It really is a negative for them. Means you're not sure of the encounter. So if you tap your leg, it's like you're wagging your tail. And you'll see an instant change in the dog's behavior as well. And they'll relax a little bit. And if you lay it on thick with the happy tone. And it's also important if you have your own dog to not pull the leash tight. And a lot of times owners do that. I teach technical leash handling. And it's a lot to try to get people to break some of their bad habits. But holding that leash tight is putting the dog into fight or flight. If you cannot flee, you're going to fight. You're going to fight with all your might.
It's interesting because I'm thinking, as you're saying that, I had a German Shepherd once who was really a big sweetheart, but you know, somebody would knock on the door, and if I held his collar, it was like the second you let go, he would stop.
Right.
And people would say, don't let go, don't let go. Not really the second I let go, that he's not going to be growling anymore.
Right. A lot of things with dogs is counterintuitive. If a dog comes running, flying out at you, barking and growling, guess what I do? Well, the thing that you wouldn't probably, but you should, is to act friendly. Because the dog's trying to figure out, A, it can't see you, doesn't know what you are. It knows you by how you act. So you have a choice to act like friend, act like foe, or act like prey.
And run, that's the bad thing.
Yeah.
Right?
The other thing about foe is that a lot of times just doing nothing and ignoring each other, dogs would never, you know, get into a crowded space and ignore everybody. Right. But we get into crowded elevators and ignore everybody that we don't know to minimize conflict. So there's things that we've been conditioned to think that it's okay and that's how you react that means totally opposite to dogs.
Yeah. We're talking with Melissa Berryman. Her book is People Training for Good Dogs, What Breeders Don't Tell You and Trainers Don't Teach You. All right, Georgia wants to know about her one-year-old golden retriever who won't get in the car. She says she feeds him in the car. She only brings him good places in the car, but he's still scared and recently ran away when she opened the back of that car.
Okay, so for one thing, if your dog's running away and not coming back and you're spending time finding it, you need to work on that. And that's where coaching comes in. Your instructor is your coach. So I would certainly recommend going back to some groundwork there. But going into from a big space to a small space can be very scary for the dog. It's like fight or flight. So if I had to collect a dog and bring it into the van to transport it, a lot of times they don't want to go into that space. Mm-hmm. So I would go in there first and the dog then would follow because they are inherent followers. With dogs, sometimes they can have issues jumping up. You want to make sure that they're okay. He's 1 year old, but that could be a hip issue as well because some of these genetic problems show up really, really young today. But what I would do is condition them to be okay about it by going in and out. She's doing the right thing by putting food. But then there's also, hey, get in the car and you're going to do it now. And then a lot of praise about it as well.
Yeah. We're talking about this sort of pecking order that dogs have. And so talk about the family because we hear things about certain, we'll go back to the German Shepherd. Supposedly they're a one person dog and they might favor one more than the other, but I've had German Shepherds and they've liked everybody in my family. So, but talk a little bit about how that works.
Well, that's a stereotype about one-person dog and terriers are all obnoxious. And it's stereotypes that we kind of feed into. Again, it's pack positions and a higher-ranking dog is going to be a little bit more less happy-go-lucky. You know, it's going to be more serious. So with the family, I teach like you're learning how to ride. So I bring the whole family in and a lot of dog trainers are focusing on just the dog. So they have one person in the family in the class and then everybody else is waiting at home thinking that you train the dog and everything's going to be okay. But with horses, if I train the horse, it does not mean you know how to ride it. Mm-hmm. And if I work with you, it doesn't mean anybody else in your family can ride the horse. So it's really important that everybody work with the animal. So I have schooling dogs. So everybody in the family gets to work with an animal and we switch off so that people have time with their own dog. But you need to work on your individual relationship with your dog. Mm-hmm. If you don't, then your dog might think that it's above the children. And not even just that, it's all your friends and family will not be working with your dog. And so you have to really be proactive about not putting them in a situation where they think that this person can't come in. Oh, there's a twig on your dog. I'm going to pull it out. Well, the dog might think, hey, you're not above me in status. You can't touch me like that. You can't pull a tick off me.
Yeah.
So you have to really be protective there.
Right. A listener wants to know, any advice to teach a dog not to jump up on folks?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say why dogs jump up. And the reason is that dogs with each other are on the same length, you know, height. So their faces are together, you know. But we are so tall that to get up to our face to communicate with us, because puppies especially do a lot of licking of faces. And you know, with wolves, they actually feed their pups that way. So one of the things that we have to do is we have to associate jumping with a negative and being on the ground with a positive. And another thing that people make a mistake of is that with dogs, and I do this in my classes where I have a dog park in my yard and I have daycare and boarding. So the dogs are running around. You get to see how they actually interact with each other. And they're usually doing exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's tone, because a lot of times a dog will jump and somebody will say, off. Off. Yeah. Hear the inflection, it's like a question. So you really need to do it their way. And they're very abrupt. They're very much put that animal in a place to almost scare the dog. You know, it's just very shocking in the way that they would communicate. So you need to associate that. And a lot of times I'll also do it so that the dog will not do it again, but never do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I praise as soon as they're down on the ground.
Yeah, that was going to be my question about discipline. You're not a proponent of the positive reinforcement method only. So describe how you discipline dogs and when you do it.
Sure. I am a proponent of a balance of positive and negative. I do a lot of positive. I mark behavior with positive. I track the dogs. I call the dogs with positive. So they're getting a lot of positive. But what I found is there's a common dog bite injury where you get a pizza. The pizza delivery guy comes to your door and the dog's hysterical at the door when the doorbell goes. And the owner comes down, the dog's still barking. You tell your dog to be quiet. You open the door and your dog goes out and bites the pizza guy. And you go, oh, I had no idea that it would happen. And the problem is you just told your dog to bite the pizza guy, because the dog doesn't know you ordered a pizza. The dog just knows that something's coming to the door, and that something could be something that could hurt them. I mean, they're at a basic level. We have everything in the dog's brain and then some. We have a lot of executive function that they don't have. So it's really hard for them to interpret our world the way we do. So when the dog's barking, when you come down to tell it to be quiet, they just hear you as getting agitated too. And they think, because they do things as a team, that when you open the door, you're both going to go out and get the enemy. Not thinking that the dog's just doing it by itself, because they hate doing things by themselves. Yeah. So what I do is what's called the withdrawal reflex, whereas I'm going to condition the dog that the no, like the low tone, is like putting your hand on a hot stove. The moment you feel the pain, you move your hand away. So I give a physical correction with the word no. So eventually I can just say the word no and the dog will respond appropriately. And when I condition the dog, what I'm doing is I'm internalizing that my no to the dog means for it to stop. I'm internalizing that no means him, not no means let's go get him.
I was going to say, when you said, you've just told your dog to go bite the pizza man. I'm like, wait, so basically in that we're the team kind of thing, you're... Yeah, with that. So it's a lot about tone of voice.
It's tone of voice and association, right. You know, and people want to use positives, and that's great, but that's not the natural world. Mm-hmm. It can get them, you know, if I do agility or I'm trying to really shape behavior, I'm going to use as much positive as possible. But with dogs, they discipline each other. Mm-hmm. There's always parameters of behavior, and I think that's really important.
You say guilt and leadership cannot go hand in hand.
Yeah, a lot of times our emotional issues get in front of being what we need to be for our dogs. And with being a trainer, you really have to get rid of all that stuff and just focus on what the dog needs. So I actually incorporate a lot of other methodologies to help people get over their issues. And one's called EFT, which is Emotional Freedom Technique. It's kind of talking about your issue while pressing on acupressure points, and it discharges that issue for you quite easily. If I have somebody who's afraid of dogs, I can do that as well and get rid of their fear really quickly. Mm-hmm. But any time that you're worried about something, your dog can see that as a weakness because they're looking for you to be the general, and the general doesn't second guess themselves.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What advice do you give for people when they're choosing a dog? Because we talked a little bit earlier about people do a lot of research on the breeds, and as we're saying, certainly some of it you can go by, but I'm thinking, you know, I had a Bichon and they say they don't like the water. This dog loved the water, you know, I'm sure they can think of their own dogs and go, oh, they said they wouldn't like this and they do. Purebreds versus, you know, mixed breed dogs. I've had purebreds and mixed breeds. I have a mixed breed now, and it seems to me the mixed breeds always seem to be a little bit more healthier than the than the purebred. So what should you keep in mind when you're thinking about bringing a dog into your life?
I think you need to keep in mind, first and foremost, is that it's work. We're selling, you know, society's selling that you can just buy this animal that with just your love and a walk once a day and plenty of food, that the dog's going to sit at your heels. I do a daycare program where not only are the dogs running around all day, but then I walk them off, you know, running through the woods for 5 miles a day. And a lot of times people just don't have that energy. Plus instruction, you know, for my classes, it's not like a 6 or 8 week, 1 hour a week type of deal where the dog will sit, stay down, come and heal, and you won't have any other issues. It really is working in life circumstances and putting some time and energy into it. So that's number one failure for people, is to really think about what it's going to take to have a dog in their lives.
Mm. We've got less than a minute left, but Susie wrote in from West Tisbury. She's loving everything you're saying here and saying it's a very helpful conversation. Could you please have your guest comment on the changes in recent years in the way we view our dogs as family members, more like children rather than an animal? What are we saying to dogs when we have them sleep in our bed and when we lean on them to meet our emotional needs?
Yeah, that's a real issue. We really need to really think about what the dog needs and not just what we need, because that's ending up with killing a lot of dogs.
So going back to the whole idea here, let's look at what's happening from the dog's perspective, not just our own. That's
right.
The message you're getting out there. All right. Melissa Berryman, her book is People Training for Good Dogs, What Breeders Don't Tell You and Trainers Don't Teach. Thanks so much for coming in this morning.
I really appreciate it. A lot of fun.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Dan Treidle and Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR station, a service of WGBH.